Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Tina S. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, May the 21st, 2021. Today we're reading from the Big Book. We are on page 39, the second paragraph, the chapter More About Alcoholism, starting with Fred is a partner in a well-known accounting firm, reading through 13 sentences, ending with In Spite of His Character and Standing. And today's readers are, readers of the text is Maura Z, page 164, Julie G, our backup is Zoe N, readers of the steps, Vasa O, 12 Traditions, Letty G, our newcomer greeter, Julie M, and our second hour host, Colleen M. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, May 20th, 2026, is a 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,477. That's 23,477. The 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,478. That's 23,478. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Vasa O to read the 12 steps. Please read, Vasa.
Thank you, Tina. Good morning, everyone. I'm Vasa. Or calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our wills and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to take personal inventory and, when we are wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And
thanks so much, Vasa. I will now ask Letty G. to read the 12 traditions. Please read, Letty.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Letty from California currently. These are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, less problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to these we serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be driven, never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on traction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, everybody, and have a good day.
Thanks so much, Letty G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we will resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 39 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, paragraph 2. And I will now ask Maura Z to start reading. Please start reading, Maura. Thank you.
Good morning, Tina. Thank you for your service. My name is Maura Z, and I'm a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Virginia. Fred is partner in a well-known accounting firm. His income is good. He has a fine home, is happily married, and the father of promising children of college age. He has so attractive a personality that he makes friends with everyone. If ever there was a successful businessman, it is Fred. To all appearance, he is a stable, well-balanced individual. Yet he is alcoholic. We first saw Fred about a year ago in hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Far from admitting he was an alcoholic, he told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse off than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so, in spite of his character and standing. So, Fred appears to be a normal guy, yet he is alcoholic. In all respects, except for my eating and my weight, I thought I was a normal person. But when it came to eating, I was not normal. And it came to my weight, I was not normal. I'm only 5 feet tall, and at my highest weight, I was 184 pounds. And I can't tell you how many times people asked me if I was pregnant. You talked about being ashamed. This program has given me back, or actually given me a life, not given me back a life, but given me a life, because I did not have one before. I was angry all the time. I was fearful all the time. This program helped me to identify where those angers and fears came from. And being able to identify them and being able to then make amends for where I was at fault opened up a door of freedom that I never, ever expected to be able to enjoy. This program, these 12 steps, are absolutely brilliant. Their main focus is to get me to a relationship with a power greater than myself. And I have that today. It may not be what I would like it to be, but that's on me. That's not on God. The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. I wondered if there was something more to what I was doing with food, but I didn't know about eating disorders. I didn't know about compulsive overeating. When I finally came to an OA meeting, it was because it was part of the syllabus in a class I was taking on the psychology of addiction. And there it was, Overeaters Anonymous. And they had the 15 questions reprinted in this textbook. And I answered yes to all of them. Today, I have a life that is not perfect. I have my struggles. I have my fears and my angers and my resentments. But I know I can deal with them with the step 10. I know I can see the end. I can see the light. I don't have to live in misery any longer. I am happy, joyous, and free most of the time. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you, Tina.
Thanks so much, Maura Z. Now, we're going to take a list of names, and although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience, too. So if you've shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back, and if you give me your first name, initial of your last name, and where you're calling from, I can take a list. Who would like to share on this paragraph?
Lisa C.
Lisa C.
Shelley B.
Shelley B.
Mary Jo P.
Mary Del P.
Judy N.
Karen K.
Karen K.
Roz G.
G. Okay, let's start with these and then we'll take another list. And when you tell me your name and your first initial, your last name, also tell me where you are calling from. So I have Lisa C., Shelley B., Mary Del P., Judy N., Karen K., and Roz G. Please share, Lisa.
Hi, good morning. This is Lisa C. I am a compulsive overeater from New Jersey, and I am recovered. When I read this, passage, and thank you so much, everyone, for your service and for a wonderful lead share. This passage doesn't talk about step 10 and then there it is. And I'm reminded gratefully of that is like the most important thing that I'm going to do in like the next couple hours is make sure that step 10 gets done. But I just really love the powerful theme that is really recurring throughout this entire book about how looks can be deceiving. To all appearance, he is a stable, well-balanced individual. It doesn't matter how I present in the workplace or how I present when I'm with a group of girlfriends or, I am a great performer and I have been performing my entire life in one way or another. And, professionally, my profession is all about performance. As an educator, right? It's about, presenting information in a way that others are going to learn. And so I have to kind of put all of that aside to get well because I have to stop performing. God has never asked me to present my life to him in a certain way, in a certain package. He's only asked for my complete honesty and for the complete transparency of my connection to him. And so I really am just reminded today of, not to be swayed or, mystified by what I see. what I see is not as valuable as really tuning in and getting grounded deep inside myself, connected with whatever it is that's out there. I don't know, you know, I don't know what it is. And I really am grateful to have an opportunity to see what is unseen and to really tune into that energy and to look at everyone around me and tell myself, right, there is a person under there that is so much bigger than anything I can see, so much more beautiful, so much more loved, so that I can be a decent human being in the world, right? And so I think, like, there's a lot of hope in that, in learning to set aside what is seen so that I can invite the depth and the greatness of everything else. You know, so really, yeah, it's easy to get depressed about this condition. But when I really think about how little I know and how much more there is and how much more will be revealed, it's so restoring, and I'm grateful. And thank you so much for allowing me to share. I pass.
Thanks so much, Lisa C. Can you tell me where you're calling from? I missed that.
Oh, that's okay. New Jersey.
New Jersey. Thanks so much, Lisa. Okay, next we have Shelly B, followed by Mary Dale P. Shelly B, please tell us where you're calling from and share, please.
Good morning. This is Shelly B in Iowa. So grateful to be here this morning. I really resonated with this paragraph. I think for one, the shame. When I finally had to recognize that I might have a problem with eating, I was so ashamed. You know, I who presented myself so well to my family, my friends, the community, I never binged in front of people. I would eat my regular, normal meals in front of people. And then when the lights were off and the doors were closed, that's when I would binge. And I remember even years ago, my husband and I were on this health kick, and I wasn't losing any weight because I would eat normally with him. And then when everyone else was asleep, I'm eating out of the pantry. And I remember him saying to my kids, you know, yeah, your mom seems to be eating normal in front of everyone, but she's not losing any weight. So I don't know. She must be eating sometime when we're not watching. And how right he was. And I was so ashamed of my eating. I'm just embarrassed. I was in OA for almost 3 years before I even told my husband. And, obviously I don't recommend that for everyone to do, but I was just so ashamed, and I understand that shame, and just reading this paragraph brought it all back for me, and I think it's a good thing, like, to remember where I came from and how it used to be. I think that's just a good reminder for me. I'm so grateful today, you know. I do what I need to do today. I'm headed out of town with some friends, and I just said to them, look, I don't travel well, so I'm going to just pack my own food. And nobody even cared. They didn't even bat an eye. They were like, okay, you know. So I think when I'm relying on my higher power for the help and the courage to do what I need to do for me, myself with this disease, he just takes care of it. And I'm really grateful for that. So anyway, that's all I've got. I'm just kind of rambling at this point. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Shelly B. from Iowa. Next, we have Mary Dale P., followed by Judy N. Please share, Mary Dale, and tell us where you're calling from. Star one, Mary Dale.
Thank you so much. This is Mary Jo P. from Illinois. Thank you for your service and your shares. I am Fred. Before program, I was stable to all appearances. I was good, but I was also numbing myself with food. I was 100 pounds more than I weighed, because that made me stable. That soothed me, that rewarded me, that calmed me. So I was calm in all situations, but eating like a fiend. So when I took the food away, all of a sudden, I too had a case of the jitters. You know, I got anxious. I was feeling the feelings, and that and continues to be a struggle for me. And so I'm feeling the feelings, and I will go back to the food when I'm anxious. So I have to ask myself every day in the morning, just as a reminder, I have it written down, you know, what were the feelings before the binge? Because if I'm not in touch with what I'm feeling, I will go to the food. And so it tells me what I need to do, though. It tells me that there's a spiritual remedy. And so, like, I used food. Food was my God. Food was number one. And I still don't think I have increased my spiritual life. I do it daily. I have a discipline in that. And I believe in it, and it works for me. But the truth is, I still don't think of God as much as I used to think of food. And I still think of food a lot. What am I eating today? What is my food plan? What vegetables? What fruit? What time am I eating? I still think of food in that way. So I still have so much work to do. But thank God there's a solution, and the solution is in the steps. The solution is in doing the disciplines of this program, you know, coming to a meeting. And I'm so grateful for this meeting. I listen mostly. And thank you, everybody, for that. And I just want to say that today, while I can have a case of the jitters or some unidentified feelings is what it really comes up to me, I want to validate myself with those feelings. Like, I have a right to be hurt about something. And it's okay. I don't have to fix, manage, or control it. I can just feel it and work through it and talk about it. And I have these instant friends in program that get me, that get these, you know, intense feelings. But I just want to say that there's such a hope here, and the hope is in this program. This hope is in this people, and the hope is in really what I need to do is just keep going to my higher power all day long. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mary Del P. from Illinois. Next, we have Judy N., followed by Karen K. Please share, Judy, and tell us where you're calling from.
Good morning. This is Judy N. from Maryland, living recovered one day at a time. I hadn't shared in a while, and I wanted to share today, even though I really don't connect very much with Fred in his experience. Fred was someone who was a success by the definition of a success. He's a partner in a well-known accounting firm, wealthy, a home. Everything that he set his mind to do, he seems to have accomplished, and he was born with an attractive personality, amiable, makes friends easily. People like his company. There's not much fear there or experience of, you know, feeling that you don't fit in, feeling like you're just different. I mean, Fred set his goals, and he seems to have accomplished them. But it reminds me, just like Bill, he's an alcoholic. And for me, to realize that, you know, to come to the point of defeat and realize that I need help because, you know, I thought I struggled through many, many years of living and trying to deal and social anxiety and on and on. So for me, it was easy. It really was for me to admit defeat and take steps 1, 2, 3. But for someone who's so self-reliant and successful and so self-confident, it becomes difficult, I think, for them to admit that they can't do it on their own. And it's progressive. And it said that it was a year ago. We first saw Fred about a year ago in the hospital. So it really, where he has the jitters, that's a physical symptom of alcoholism. So in the next year, Fred has to go through all these different experiences to realize that he can't do it on self-knowledge or his own willpower, that he's going to need a power greater than himself to overcome this malady, the spiritual malady. And it makes me feel bad for him because I think it was actually easier for me to get on the path of recovery and work through the steps. Maybe I didn't have to have so many experiences. I didn't, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall, so to speak. And that's what makes me feel about Fred in reading this section today. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Judy, and perfect timing from Maryland. Next, we have Karen K., followed by Roz G. Please share, Karen.
Good morning. My name is Karen Kay from Syracuse, New York, and my credits don't transfer. And thank you, everybody, for your service. When I heard the lead chair, what I identified with is how in my active addiction, or even in recovery in the very beginning, is really working on like a dual life. You know, I presented myself one way to the world, but it was, you know, misery in the inside. And then when I was able to let go and to ask for help, that's when things started to change. And, you know, even though, you know, Fred's got all this stuff, he's still a mess. You know, not that I have a house or whatever, but, you know, I know for me that my soul and my recovery needs to be shiny within myself, and not worried about what other people think. And for me, it's making sure that when I do my nightlies, and I send them to a few fellows, and where that happens for me is emotional dishonesty. You know, am I doing more than I think I can, so I can present myself to my other 12-step programs and OA and do this and do that? And, you know, what is realistic for me to do and be honest? And so as long as I'm not running a dual life and being honest, life is good. Life is really easy. And also, like what was said earlier about, you know, how God can help me get through all of this. And, of course, you know, the people that I work with and the people that sponsor me, I'm very grateful for all their help. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Karen K. from New York. Next, we have Roz G. But before we do, let me remind everybody where we're reading from. We are on page 39, paragraph 2 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, starting with Fred is a partner in a well-known accounting firm. All right, Roz, please share with us.
Okay, thank you so much for your service. My name is Roz G., compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. And thank you, God, for my recovery. For my recovery, God, without you, I can do nothing. So I just want to say I have letters before my name and after my name. And I own a home that I make payments to the bank. And I own a couple of cars, and I have a wonderful career and a retirement plan and a little bit of savings, not very much, but some. I'm very well established in my career. I'm very well respected. I have successfully raised 3 children. They're adults now. They're doing really well, all 3 of them. I have good relationships with everyone. And hobbies that I adore. I've traveled the world in some spots, and some I'd still like to travel to. I have a bucket list and a lot of friends inside of program and outside of program. But I am a compulsive overeater. I have the allergy of the body, and I have the obsession of the mind. And all of the experiences that I have gone through over compulsive overeating have never cured me. And I did not know any of these things until I started to study this book several years ago. And this knowledge has to come with respect. Now, yeah, at the bottom of the paragraph, it says self-knowledge would fix it. So, no. knowing about it, studying about it, going to the books that I had on my shelf, and the counselors and the pay and weigh programs gave me knowledge of eating, but they had nothing to do with the spiritual malady. And there's nothing I can do about it. But what I can do is I can have a daily reprieve. I can work through self-service and self-sacrifice. I can do the 10th step every day, and the 11th step in the morning review and the morning upon awakening. And I can call people during the day that understand me. And that's how I live my life. This is a way of life. So whether I know it or not, there's actions I have to take to prevent me from going back into that pit of compulsive overeating. And I, you know, humiliating experiences, I'm sure we've all had them. I've had them too. You know, going being in a wedding where I was the bride, the maid of honor, and my friend and I went out to get a dress. We went to this certain section and it didn't fit in the dressing room. And I was so humiliated. And she said, Roz, okay, I'll wrap up. She said, Roz, I think you're a full-figured gal. And boy, was that, she didn't mean it, but man, was that painful. And I have way more to tell, but no time. Thank you, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Roz G. from California. And we're going to take another list of names. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you give me your first name, first initial, your last name, and where you're calling from, I can take another list. Who would like to share on these 13 sentences?
Maureen S. from Miami.
I'm in Michigan.
I got somebody from Miami.
Tony B.
Got Tony B. All I got was Tony B.
Maureen S. from Miami.
Maureen from Miami. And there was a gentleman I didn't get. Monica.
LCM.
Who was the gentleman?
Tim from Michigan.
Who was it?
Sim. S-I-M. Yeah, Sim.
Sim.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, let's go with these six, and if we have that time, we'll take some more. Okay, I have Tony B, Terry S, Maureen, Sim M, Monica T, and Kelsey. And then give me the first initial for your last name and where you're calling from when you share. Okay, Tony B, please get us started.
Thank you, Tina. Thanks for your service. And everyone doing service and the lead share and all the shares so far. My name is Tony B. I'm a very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater living in Scotland, just a day at a time. And just thanks to God's grace and mercy and all of you, my dear fellows who I learn from. So grateful to have a chance to share on this paragraph. Like has been said, I don't relate to Fred very much. He's got a very, very short story. That is in the book Experience, Strength and Hope. And really, he's making one point, and the point that he's making is you can have it all together and still be an alcoholic. And so his story doesn't tell of his past, of his upbringing, of his dysfunctional family, or of any of that. It really just says it was all really good, and then it wasn't. And this could be you as well. And he just wants to make that one illustration. And we get it here, you know, the lead up. He's a well-balanced individual, yet he is an alcoholic, full stop. And there's the paragraph, there's the sentence that really matters. He's an alcoholic. He has the physical allergy and the mental illness. That means he'll keep going back to it, even if he's away from it. You know, we can put the food down, that's fine. And he thinks that that's enough. You know, that's where it says, you know, he thinks that he gets knowledge about his condition from them. And he's like, oh, great, yes, I understand. And I've got a weird mental twist that will always, thank you, yes, I understand that. So I've got, you know, very good character and standing. I've got very good abilities, and I'm not going to drink anymore. It's no good for us. We've got the mental illness. We've really got a mental illness that needs treating on a daily basis. My story is not like Fred's. You know, there's a lot of mess in my story before I. But I'm a real compulsive overeater, and I've got access to the solution, just like Fred has, just like you have, just like all the newcomers on the line have, just like we all have, thank God. So let's work it. Yeah, I'll leave it there, Tina. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks so much, Tony B. from Scotland. Next, we have Terry S., followed by Maureen. Please share, Terry, and tell us where you're calling from. Star one, Terry? Was there a Terry S.? Okay, let's go with Maureen.
I think it's Marina M.
I'm sorry?
Marina M. Is that her name?
Marina M. Okay. Please share. Marina M. Somebody from Miami. Who was that? Okay, let's go with Sim M.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Sim B in Michigan. Sim with an S. Yep. Thank you. Recovering slowly, very slowly, and moment by moment and daily with all your help. And yeah, Fred. Wow. Yeah, I you know, prom. I was like the prom king. You know, the athlete of the school, you know, one of the most popular people, went to a very good university, did all the things, you know, I resonate very much with my life on the outside looked great until it didn't. And when I started to live alone in university, I was like, wow, I am crazy. How is it that I manage my stress with this compulsive overeating? I'm like, I don't understand what's happening. I didn't even have words to understand the behavior. It was so deeply entrenched. And then when I lived fully alone in Spain, where no one spoke English and I was learning Spanish, and there were very few people living in this city, and I started to see myself in my full bulimia. It's like, what's happening? Like, this sickness of the body and mind, and really of the spirit, you know, the allergy was so strong. And, you know, I've managed to present as, you know, 165-pound person my whole life with a musculoskeletal system that seems like I'm, you know, a top-level athlete, and I can move. I'm so gifted to be able to move in so many different ways, and yet, even still, and I have a great job, and I get to do massage therapy, and everything seems great, two kids and a dog in a suburban neighborhood. It's like, check, 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 check. But it doesn't matter, because ultimately, when that 8 o'clock p.m., you know, bell rings and it's like, oh, I need something. There's something that I need that I can't get. And then the food gets loud and I start feeling the panic button. Like, uh-oh, it's coming again. It's like a demon, you know, like inside. So I just very much resonate with the, with just the humility that I cannot do this alone. And I seem to, the gift of it is that it's opening me up to see how in life, regardless of the sickness, even though I have this specific one of compulsive overeating,
and to remind
is like, thank you, that nobody can do life alone effectively and have a great life and be of service. So that's maybe the feeling of being very ordinary and extraordinary and grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Cindy from Michigan. Next, we have Monica T, followed by Kelsey, and then we can take a few more. Monica, please share with us.
Good morning, Tina. Good morning, everyone. My name is Monica T. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Florida, presently in Vermont. So here we are in Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism. You know, subtitles for Monica. More about the obsession of the mind, more about my insane thinking, my inability to think straight when it comes to this one area of my life for me. Like Fred, I too had everything. And the outside looks pretty good. He's happy, he's got a family, blah, 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 blah. But in the inside, you know, I'm a crazy woman who can't control my eating. And so he ends up in a hospital here, and what we're seeing, you know, this is awful. How in the world did I end up here? Wow, you know, my nerves. And so he's not at this point able to, he's denying, you know, he's defying, he's delaying. He's not able to accept. He's not at step one, obviously. And so he makes up his mind to quit drinking altogether. You know, we try different things, and these stories are showing different ways that we are trying to fight this disease. So he makes up his mind. Yep, I made up my mind too. This is it. Today, I'm being good today. I'm going to follow my food program. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, how long did it take for me to realize that I couldn't do it anymore myself, you know? I kept trying over and over again. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy, right? So he's still in denial, and he's still not able to take step one. So they review with him again about alcoholism and what they've learned and the symptoms. And he says, you know, he's smart. Yeah, this makes a lot of sense to me. I agree. Good to me, too. But I'm just positive that myself, I'm just going to be determined here and use my self-will. And I'm going to do it. Self-knowledge would fix it. So, you know, I think, yeah, okay, now I understand this crazy thinking. So next time this crazy thought pops up in my head, I'm going to go, ha, 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 I know you. You're that crazy thought. And I'm just not going to follow you. And then I do. Because I just think it's the best idea I've had in a long time. Insane thinking, inability to think straight. You know, so again, here, self-knowledge is not the answer. It is a physical remedy, again, that we're trying. And he needs a spiritual. Only the spiritual will conquer this disease of the mind.
And a reminder.
And thank God, we got a solution, and it's these steps. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Monica T. from Florida, currently in Vermont. Good to hear you. Next, we have Kelsey, and then we'll take a couple more names. Please share, Kelsey, and tell us where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Elsie M. from Pennsylvania.
Elsie, okay.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I want to share that I just am so grateful for the simple fact that I recognize that self-knowledge is not the answer. And I grew up, you know, very well educated and with a family that believed that the harder you work, the better you did, and all just, you know, work hard and you'll succeed. And so I thought self-knowledge was everything. I thought it was everything. And I went and got a master's degree in self-knowledge. And, you know, I mean, I just thought it was the way to do it. It wasn't until, you know, I was even in AA for a while before I came into OA. And really, both programs taught me that, no, self-knowledge avails me nothing. That it is really God and my a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity and help me
with life on life's terms. And I have a son who has mental illness, and it's very difficult to live with him. And my higher power is there to help me at every turn and to give me guidance and comfort and a kind of, you know, when to act and when not to act, that kind of thing. So I'm just so grateful that I know that today, that there is a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. And, you know, it's really step two for me. And I just can't say enough good things about that. So that's all I have. Again, I'm Elsie from Pennsylvania, LCM. I pass.
Thanks so much, LCM from Pennsylvania. Thank you. Is there a Marana from Miami that wants to share?
Yes, Marini S. from Miami.
Marini. Okay, go ahead, Marini.
Thank you. Marini here, a deeply loved compulsive overeater. I looked at this passage, and wow, I remember I've only been in program about 6 months, and Vision was my first meeting, looking at about 700 people, you know. And so when I walked in, y'all, I walked in like Fred, because I was like, man, look at all these crazy people running around here, weighing their food. Oh, man, I had all kind of conversations in my head about y'all, I'm going to be honest. But in my mind, I was just like Fred, because I had to tell to myself when I read this, wow, Moraimi, you're a long way from admitting. Moraimi is a long way from admitting she can do nothing about herself, right, by compulsive overeating. And I checked the boxes off, like when I sat in there. Yeah, I was interested. Yeah, I had the symptoms. And I even conceded. But my self-knowledge that had gotten me where I thought I was in life, right, the degree, the like living my best life, seriously. You know, the positivity, because it says here, like, he was positive, right? Like, that his humiliating experience plus his knowledge, right? Like, I humiliated myself with food. I got myself up to 300 pounds. But here, like, I see Fred. I saw myself, you know, and I'm realizing, you know, that the self-knowledge, you know, am I an addict? Oh my God, am I one of those? You know? And I'm just grateful to be here and learning that there's so much God wants to do inside of me. And I get to learn that with you all, and I'm serious, I made a mockery of y'all, to be honest. But I get it, and I'm so grateful for all of you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Marini from Miami. We have time for two more. Who would like to share?
Joe M. from Minnesota. Oregon.
Joe M. and somebody else, but I didn't hear.
Liz S. from Oregon.
Okay. Let's take these two and see if we have any more time. Please share, Joe.
Okay. Thank you very much. Compulsive overeater. For me, this paragraph has two big takeaways. One is the listing of facts at the top of the paragraph. These are all true about Fred, and they're all assets that other people can observe about Fred, and yet he's an alcoholic. That the facts of Fred's life, these facts about Fred's life, have nothing to do with the fact that he's an alcoholic. They're separate and independent. And I think it's important that they pick out an example of someone who's doing really well, supposedly by external standards, because this is contrasting with the story of Jim earlier in the chapter. Things aren't going well for Jim. He's an alcoholic. Things are going well for Fred. He's also an alcoholic. So I think the writers of the book perhaps are trying to cover their bases and say, it doesn't matter what your external circumstances are. You may still be an alcoholic. And then the second takeaway for me is that all the things that Fred is telling himself, he's far from admitting he was an alcoholic. He told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. He would not believe himself an alcoholic. He was positive that his humiliating experience and the knowledge he had acquired would keep him sober the rest of his life. So those things, that's a sign of alcoholism. I mean, that's a sign of my compulsive overeating. The things that I tell myself to try to solve the problem or to try to avoid admitting what is true about me, which is that I'm a compulsive overeater. When I look at the facts about Fred's life, I identify with that in that I also had facts about my life from an external point of view that were positive. I had a good job. I had a car. I had a checking account. I had friends. I came from a decent family, things like that. But those things did not stop me from becoming a compulsive overeater, and they were not going to be a solution to my compulsive overeating. So I completely identify with this paragraph in all of its two big takeaways. They're telling my story here, and I think it's a beautifully written paragraph. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Joe M. from Minnesota. And next we have Liz S. Please share, Liz.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, everyone, this morning. Liz S., recovered compulsive eater from Oregon. I keep feeling, as I listen to the shares, how external things aren't the solution. I'll look in the fridge. I'll look in the cupboard. I'll look in the drug cabinet under the sink. I want something to take in to fix me. And it isn't existing. It doesn't exist. It is God from wherever God is. Inside me, outside me, everything I look at, it's so nebulous. It's so hard to grasp for me. I feel that there's a solution. But every time I think about food, instead of thinking about a 10th step, or instead of being willing to sit with my feelings, I think that an external will fix me. And it does not for me. None of the mood stabilizers I take fix me. None of the food I eat fixes me. So I need to turn to God. I need to do my 10th and 11th steps daily. And I need to live in 10, 11, and 12. And with that, I pass.
Thanks so much, Liz S. from Oregon. Okay, we have time for one more share. Who would like to take it? Anybody want the 3 minutes we got? Nobody? Okay. All right, thank you, one. Thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. And today's share ID for Thursday, May the 21st, 2026, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,480. That's 23480. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Julie G., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then.
Thank you, Tina. I'm Julie G. I'm a compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until